Welcome to the first episode of The Meeple Podcast. I'm Bill Price.
And I'm Hollis Biggs.
And we are The Meeple Podcast. This is a new podcast that is going to be primarily aimed at beginners.
Like myself, for sure.
To the board game hobby. And yes, surprisingly, there is a board game hobby. Very similar to the crocheting hobby or... I don't know.
Needlepoint. Or knitting. All those are crafty.
Crafty and clothes making. So very much like those, there are there is jargon. There is terminology. And horribly, there can be some gatekeeping. And this podcast is to help people kind of get past that. And I actually have another podcast called the Roasted Games Podcast with my buddy Kaz. And we talk a lot about heavier, complicated, 2 hour long, crunchy board games in the modern board game variety. And we use a lot of terminology, a lot of jargon, a lot of specialized vocabulary, if you will, to the board game hobby that can turn a lot of people off. And one of the things that actually gave me the idea for this podcast here is I had a friend who, Julie in Iowa, who is always has always been a loyal listener. And I was talking to her about the podcast one day, and I'm like, "Well, you really like it, right?" And she's like, "Yeah, I listened to it. I've listened to it since from the beginning, and I can honestly say, like, I really didn't for a long time, for like the first year, I didn't really understand anything you guys were talking about. I eventually got it the more games we played and things like that, but I really listened because I'm your friend." And it,
hey, that's fair. We all got to start somewhere.
Right? Boom. To my knees. I'm like, "Oh my gosh, that's really cool."
That's a good friend right there.
It is a good friend, but... that makes me a bad friend because I had no idea that she was struggling like that. And I feel like there are probably a lot of people like that. I know when I first got into the hobby, I ordered a bunch of games. I was trying to figure out like how to play them. I would look up stuff on YouTube. Sometimes I wouldn't really understand some of the playthrough videos because they just kind of assume that you have this baseline knowledge. And I have been to board game groups where, you know, I'll have my game that I'm really excited to play with somebody, and you can just see the looks of disdain, you know, like when I imagine your older brother would get or something if he came home and was like, "Let's play Monopoly, guys." And just be like, "Oh, no."
We're definitely trying to open the gates of the gatekeeping here for yes. In this podcast.
Absolutely. And I've been very guilty, obviously, of this myself. And what we're trying to do is build, kind of reinvent a more of a tolerant kind of environment here. If you like Monopoly, good on you. It's not necessarily my cup of tea, but I will play Monopoly with you. And you know what? You are still a board gamer if that's your game. If you like exploding kittens, you're still a board gamer. That's your game. You want to sit down and play, it's Cards Against Humanity. You know what? Still a board gamer. I'm probably not going to hang out at your Cards Against Humanity party for a long time, but you know what? Still a board gamer.
That's okay. Everyone's got to start somewhere. And I think those are definitely some entry level games to get people excited about the hobby as a whole, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's so much that games like that can teach you about just basic mechanisms in games, how things work, following along with strategies, even games like Monopoly, where one of the big knocks on it in the community is it's so random. You just roll dice and move, and so basic. But that's a mechanism that's used in other games. Yeah. They roll dice, and it's random.
It's also what makes you want to flip the table halfway through, but that's okay.
It is. It is. And if I sat here and just flipped heads or tails, and if I got 10 heads in a row, I flip the table. Am I playing the same game? Some would argue, but no, I don't think you are. I think that that there are a lot of long-term good strategic and tactical choices that you can make, even in the most basic games. And sometimes people, they start there and they're like, man, I really love Exploding Kittens. What's next? What's the next step up from that? You know, and then maybe they get into Dominion, you know, which is another game I see by the look on your face. You're like, what is that?
Yeah, that one's new to me as well.
We will absolutely get into that. That is at some point.
In my defense, most games are new to me, which is partly why I'm on this podcast.
And it's perfect, because if we both knew what we were talking about the whole time, I don't think this is the podcast we'd be doing.
Probably not.
So this is exciting. I'm excited to kind of be able to help not only you, mm-hmm. but also the collective you that are listening, kind of start and go along on this this ride together, and sort of see what comes next.
Sure.
And I think a lot of it really has to do with the basics. I mean, as far as what we hope to accomplish with this podcast moving forward is defining things. What kind of games are out there? What are the differences between this game and that game? And if somebody says, hey, this is a deck building game with some, you know, some worker placement and set collection, with some light bluffing and blind bidding, you don't look at them the way that you're looking at me right now. You can say, oh, okay, just like this other game that I played.
Hopefully my eyes didn't glaze over too much there, but I'm excited to learn right along with everybody listening.
Perfect. And I am ready to help out any way that I can. So I know that we've played a few games already.
Yeah.
Kind of some intro ones. What have you played so far?
Ooh, definitely got some good ones here. I think one of my newest favorites is going to be Splendor. It's kind of a resource building game. Collecting.
Resource management.
Yep. I've learned a few things, but Splendor is definitely a good one. Pretty easy to learn and pick up on. Five Crowns is one of my favorite card games. I grew up playing a lot of card games. That was just what was big in my family growing up. So that one was kind of an easy introduction. That kind of goes along with Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza. Yes. It's a card game, but I wouldn't necessarily say you play it like cards.
Right.
So that one is a lot of fun. Also a little dangerous at times.
Spoon's ass.
It is. What are some other good ones? We've got So Clover. That's another fun mm-hmm. one with your little clover boards that you're trying to build clues to tell people which...
Associations. Between words. Yeah.
Thank you. So Clover is a good one. Hitster is another recent kind of fun one we've played where you're trying to age music... age songs, essentially, right. In terms of chronologically where they fell on the timeline of your other cards. So that one's kind of cool.
And that's an interesting one because it uses an app, mm-hmm. which there are board games now that are it's becoming more and more common to have a specialized app come along with the board game. And in this particular one, you scan QR codes of songs on the cards, it plays the music, and you try and kind of sort where it's going to be without seeing who the artist is or what the song is just by listening.
So. That one's definitely a lot of fun. Also very challenging, especially if you get a lot of cards like within a few years of each other. So that one's always kind of tough, especially if you have no idea what the song is. Like that kind of got me a couple of times.
Right. You're just like, I know this is disco. Is it between 1971 and 1973? Or, yeah.
And I think the songs go all the way from like the 30s to today?
It's
to 2023?
From... It's from 1923 to 2023. I believe it spans 100 years of music.
That is kind of the thing. Kind of insane, but very cool. Yeah. And again, a really fun one that we've played recently.
We are not sponsored by Hitster.
And then the last one on my list, just kind of that kind of comes to mind, would be Seven Wonders Architects.
Oh, that's a great one. Seven Wonders Architects and Splendor. And maybe you could probably toss in Ticket to Ride are three of my favorite ones to introduce people who have maybe very limited experience with modern board games. And just to kind of get a taste of sort of what it's like. And so those are all three excellent. So we will definitely be talking about all of those in more detail. And I know you still have yet to play Ticket to Ride.
I have not, unfortunately. Yes. But Ticket to Ride. I know it's coming soon, so I'm excited.
Ticket to Ride was one of the games, that and Settlers of Catan, which is now just Catan, were the two big ones that brought me into the hobby. And a lot of people who've been in the hobby for, I'd say, 8, 10, 12 years, around that time period, probably did get brought in by those two games. Catan has fallen a little bit out of favor as that kind of entry point, that gateway drug, if you will, because it has sort of evolved this kind of competitive meta where everything really kind of seems to depend on initial setup. And it's still a great game to play with people with an equal experience level to you. But if even I were to play with somebody who's plays it really competitively in like these semi-pro tournaments and stuff that they have, I would still, like, they'd be able to tell right off the bat who's going to win. They could walk by and say, player two is going to win this just based on initial placement. And so it is a lot of fun, but it is, I don't want to say solvable, but more so than a lot of other games. It really is dependent on that initial placement. So still a great gateway game. And speaking of gateway games, are you familiar with the term gateway game?
No, and actually that's a great point, because I love a lot of these games, but I don't even know which ones are gateway games. To me, I would think something like maybe Monopoly is a gateway game. Would you kind of throw it in that category necessarily, or?
I wouldn't. I would typically define gateway games as more of a gateway into modern board gaming. I would put Monopoly in kind of a broader category I would call family games.
Kind of your classics.
And, yeah, your classics. But it can also extend to things like Exploding Kittens.
Okay.
And things, Uno. Things that you don't think of necessarily as quote-unquote board games, but we kind of include those kind of card games and things like that in sure. In family games. Family games would be, it's kind of a game that you can play with a whole family. It's typically 2 to 4 players, maybe 2 to 5, and it's something, usually something that your grandma, and I'm a grandfather, so I can say this, but it's something that your grandma would be comfortable learning the rules in a few minutes and playing. Okay. A gateway game has a tendency to be, at least to me, and if you generally talk about gateway games in the hobby, you'll typically, people will think of games that are more complex. Things like A Ticket to Ride.
Okay.
Things like Catan. Things like even Seven Wonders, not the Architect's version, but the full game, has been at one point in time considered kind of gateway-esque.
Okay.
And Splendor is another great gateway game that I've had probably more success with Splendor than anything else.
Such like an easy one to get into.
It
and
really is.
It's a fun game to play. Especially,
yes.
You can play it one-on, or really with just two people, or you can play it with... How many can you?
Up to four.
To four. Yep. Okay, great.
And it is really, it is so good because it has more rules and thought, at least decision space than like a Monopoly or a Life or something where you're just randomly rolling dice. For anyone who's unfamiliar with Splendor, it's a game where you're what we call drafting. These poker chips that represent jewels, and you're kind of a jewel, I don't know, jewelry maker or
something
jewel
like that.
Dealer.
A jewel collector almost.
Sure. And so what you're doing is you're on your turn, you're deciding yourself which is nothing random about it. You're deciding yourself which jewels you're going to take, and you can take up to three different colors, or you can take two of the same color if other certain things are allowed.
And the colors equate to different to jewels,
different
right?
Different jewels, yes. So, and then there are cards out on the table that are exposed that cost a certain combination of jewels. Like this card over here might cost three blue jewels, a white jewel, and two green jewels. And so you turn those in and you take the card and you put it in front of you. And it may give you victory points, which is how you win the game. Mm-hmm. And it will give you kind of permanent access to another jewel. So that you don't have to actually physically spend the jewels that you have cards. They represent kind of permanent jewels.
And that's really the key to
yes,
kind of winning the game, is seeing how many permanent jewels you can keep to collect those victory points to
yes.
win.
Yes. And so, and that's what makes it such, for me, such a great gateway game, is there are so many modern board games that employ that, they employ drafting. It employs victory points as a way to win. Buying things, you know, like buying cards with resources. Mm-hmm. So there's some resource management there. And it's also what's referred to as an engine builder. So in an engine building game, you are building, you're constructing usually with cards, some kind of conversion machine. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, you can use this and this to generate this other thing that lets you do this other thing. And then as you continue to build this engine, then it just, you can do more and more things, and your turns become bigger and more fun. And it's just, you can see people, engine builders make such good gateway games, because you can just see people's expressions as they get stronger and stronger turns, and they can just do so much stuff. I'm going to take that card for free, and then it gives me more stuff that I can do. And so that's why I think it's engine builders are fantastic, and I couldn't recommend Splendor any more than I already have. But
it's such a good one.
Yes.
But I actually have another question for you here, sure. Bill. So one thing that you've kind of consistently mentioned is the hobby as a whole. So board games, games in general as a hobby. Once you get into the hobby, what does that entail? Is that just game nights at, you know, your local breweries that host them, where a group of people who maybe doesn't know each other will all come together and play a couple of board games that a few people have brought? Or is it more than that?
Well, it's the glorious thing about the hobby, is it can be whatever you want it to be. I have known people who their whole involvement in the hobby, I consider them to be very experienced gamers. They have a handful of games. They have a consistent group that they play with, and the whole reason they're doing it is because they want to play, you know, this particular game. They want to play Dune Imperium, or they want to play Star Trek Ascendancy, and they want to play it all the time. And they do. And that's kind of the extent of their involvement. They don't go and buy hundreds of games, like I do. They don't feel the need to go to conventions. They don't feel the need to even go to bigger game nights. But the hobby can be more than that. It can be going to game nights at breweries and playing with or restaurants or wherever.
Sure.
Your public library may have game nights. Meetup is how I started my first game night in Denver years and years and years ago. And it was great. Ended up being 20 plus people every week for years. Until I left and moved here to Louisville. But it can be all those things, and it can be multiple game groups. It can be collecting. I'm kind of a board game collector. I have a lot of games that I have games that I've never played. I have games that are still in shrink wrap. And that for me is part of the hobby that I enjoy. Is acquiring and being able to, it's that completionist in me. And that's what I consider kind of to be my part of the hobby. But it can also involve going to conventions. I've been to Gen Con for the last couple of years. It's the largest board game convention in the United States. There was some 70,000 people there last year. They broke all kinds of attendance records. It's huge. The industry is huge. Thousands of games come out now every year.
And when you go to these conventions, is it game distribution companies trying to sell you their wares? Are there also, you know, game like meetups at those? What kind of, tell us a little bit about what a convention entails.
You know what? I think that is a great question, but I think it's a great question for the next episode, because there is a lot to get into with that. And I think that this actually is probably a really good place to stop this first episode. And I think we'll pick back up with a few more definitions next time, and definitely get into conventions and what that's about.
That sounds great.
That, for a lot of people, is a big part of the hobby.
Yeah, it's a huge social part of it as well. Yes,
especially when you say it like, the hobby. I'm not sure how else to say it.
No, I think that's a good way to describe it.
All right. Well, we are new, but you can absolutely reach us a couple different places. We're on Instagram at The Meeple Podcast. We are, you can reach us on email at themeeplepodcast@gmail.com. And you can also sign up for our mailing list at themeeplepodcast.com.
Thanks so much for listening in, and we hope you guys will join us next time.
We'll see you then.